The future direction of the European Union is one of the main questions for government leaders and ordinary citizens across the continent. Some of the latter expressed their views in the Brexit referendum. The pluses and negatives of the current political and trade bloc are also at the top of the agenda of the ongoing French presidential elections. And it's with that in mind that we invited two leading members, Czech members of the European Parliament, to discuss in Brussels how they see the current situation, the challenges, and where the Czech Republic should be positioning itself as some European countries probably opt to deepen and widen their cooperation together on policy areas, while others decide to go their own way. Pavel Telička is a deputy president of the European Parliament after being initially elected on the ANO ticket. And Luděk Niedermayer is a former vice governor of the Czech National Bank, also elected in 2014 to the Parliament in Brussels, but for the Top 09 Stan party. I asked Pavel Telička, first of all, what was his reaction to the victories of French centrist Emmanuel Macron and National Front candidate Marine Le Pen in the first round contest, where Europe was a crucial election issue.
To be absolutely honest, I think that the result is plus minus what has been expected. Le Pen making it through the second round was expected. And I would say, judging by the last few weeks or so, Macron was seen as one of the favorites. So it is a relief. Some could say, look, I mean, it would have been better if Le Pen wouldn't have made it to the second round. For me, Fillon is a bit problematic in some areas. So I would say that maybe in this combination, it might be more likely that we will have Macron as president and Le Pen losing and not having someone with, let's say, difficult paths or extreme positions. So I wouldn't say relief. It's going to be tough, by the way. My head of office is French and he works closely with Macron, and I think that they see it by far not being over.
What's your reaction? I mean, Macron, he's okay, he's got some government past, but he's still to a certain extent an unknown quantity. And whether, even if he wins the second round, then the question is, will he get a parliamentary majority to follow that with no real party behind him? Okay, it's a movement, but
There are many question marks, and future is always uncertain, but I guess as the beginning it's really not bad. And what I was lucky to see is that support for Le Pen was really just sliding down in last, let's say, 2 months. But at the same time, it seems to me that France is a divided society where around 40% of people were voting for really extreme politicians. That would cause a lot of troubles for French people and also for the others. So this is not a good sign. As you rightly said, even if Macron makes it to Elysée Palais, it will depend on parliament and obviously on how strong he is in the reform agenda. You know, take it as for the beginning that he is slightly left-oriented liberal. He's a pro-business guy with experience from American Investment Bank, and I guess among the candidates by far the most pro-European. This is a good beginning, but it's not enough because to turn around the situation in France, unemployment, low economic growth, that actually, I believe, form the roots of these 40% people voting for Le Pen, an extreme left candidate. This will not be an easy task, but as I said, good beginning, and especially good for French and also good for us.
Mm. I mean, when you look at the results, there's a huge swathe, especially in the north of France. I mean, you could call it the Rust Belt, a lot of the south of France where Le Pen got a lot of votes. And In some way, this is an anti-European vote. You'd agree with that, and perhaps, and what does that say about how you think European or the institutions here or you are getting the message across about Europe?
It's a very good and interesting question, because we could make a simple calculation that plus minus 20 plus 20 makes it 40, and that that means something. But if you look into some of the polls, then 73% of the French wouldn't like a French franc back. Roughly 50% are basically very or quite satisfied with what integration brought at a time when the EU in general is not really popular. And I could mention a number of other figures. So I agree with Mr. Niedermayer that France is split, as well as many other countries are split, that we do have a crisis of politics in France, like in some other countries, that there is a number of question marks for sure. But those 40 percentage points, are they really in favor of these two, or is it rather a vote against something? You know, I think that a part of it is a protest vote. And the same way we could look at it, whether, you know, is it really an anti-European, anti-EU vote or not? Again, I think the figure would be different. On the other hand, we would find, at least with some of the other candidates, again, an anti-EU as well, for example, Fillon. For me, the big question, and in fact a question which was not highlighted in terms of what, how they would like to achieve it in the campaign, neither by Macron, I have to say, nor Le Pen, as they are, as it has been said, not related to well-established tradition political parties. Where is the center of gravity of the future, let's say, government or governance in France? And if it is here or there, how will they achieve it? So there is a risk of an institutional, I wouldn't say maybe crisis, but still battlefield in France after the French elections. On the other hand, I'm still optimistic that the time is sufficient, especially if Macron succeeds in the second round to come and form a strong political entity that would manage well also in the elections. So I think that also the figures in the parliament will change from what we see today. But still, the tension, the inter-institutional tension will be there, which will put an extra demand on, hopefully, Macron.
Mm-hmm. Do you have worries? I mean, how do you interpret the vote? I mean, it's not easy to interpret a vote because people vote for many, many reasons.
Sure.
But how do you see it? And maybe going forward, the difficulties, if France is in a position where, you know, they call it cohabitation, but it probably makes it sound easier than it is. But
you know, for me, this was not exactly anti or pro-European vote, and I can see some similarities with the elections in US or in Brexit vote, because it seems to me that especially since just a few last year, economy was not doing well, and a lot of people were suffering, or in at least in relative terms. And they are not happy with the situation, they are not happy with the society, they are not happy with the politics. And then someone turn around and say, okay, guys, I have a simple solution. You don't need to do anything. I will just or withdraw from European Union, or close the borders, or introduce customs, or prohibit the trade, or introduce a French franc, something like that. And we obviously, as a decent people, we know that nothing out of that makes sense. And actually, especially those people will suffer if these policies are implemented. But they give them those people hope that there is a simple solution. And I guess this is the biggest reason what is standing behind this vote. It's frustration of people, dissatisfaction, economic stress, and somehow they believe to liars who said that we have a simple solution in this very difficult complex where there is nothing like a simple solution. But at the same time, I believe that France can make it, but providing that they will be able to form a reasonable majority in the parliament that will back up some reform agenda. And if we are going into the past, let's say 15 years ago, among the largest economies of Europe, it was Germany who was in the biggest mess. And under socialist government, actually, this was especially Hartz reform. It was nothing like something extremely radical. This was just reasonable, decent improvement of certain law.
Mm-hmm. I mean, obviously, Europe was an issue in and will be in the French elections, and people are talking about what is the future of Europe. People talk about multi-speed Europe, whatever that means, maybe about a core group with Germany being in the core and maybe certain other countries, Belgium, Netherlands, Luxembourg, whatever, going with them and pushing things ahead. And by implication, other countries not being in that core group. And probably the Czech Republic would not be in that core group because of where it is now. Not in the euro, and various other factors. What are your feelings about where Europe should be, if multi-speed is fine, and where the Czech Republic should be?
Well, multi-speed Europe or multi-speed European Union is a reality. We've got countries with euro without. We've got countries in Schengen outside. We've got countries with other exemptions. We've got even different speeds of integration in different policies. Even if someone is not complying with or fully implementing and enforcing the legislation, you already have a bit of a different speed. So it is a reality. And the expectation of some people, including a lot of Czech politicians, that there is a way how to refrain or resist the multi-speed character of the European Union is absolutely naive. Yeah, I mean, this might be less of the case in the future. It might be more of the case. I mean, it will depend, of course, on the ability to identify the right issues, say these are the solutions, and then you will see whether all will be able to be on board, or someone will say, okay, I don't want to be a part of it. And if there are too many that say we don't want to be a part of it, then you will have a set number of countries which will say we're going to go even with higher speed ahead. So the issue really is where the Czech Republic would like to be. And I'm really amazed by the response of, or let's say, comments of some Czech politicians in Prague saying we don't want multi-speed Europe. And you know why? Because automatically, on the back of their mind, it is that we would be on the periphery. We would be there with a slow speed. Well, I would say, look, this is a reality. It might be more of a reality even in the future. So the thinking we should be having in Prague is where exactly we would like to be. And somehow you hinted that it's automatic that Czech Republic would not be in what you call the core. I mean, we can call it different ways, but fine, just for the simplicity, let's call it the core. I would say, look, I mean, the core, that will not happen also overnight. Even if there is an ambition to have it, it's going to take a few years' time.
But if we look at it already, I mean, could say there's already a core and the Czech Republic is...
Yeah, but I don't think it's a well-functioning core, to be honest. Yeah, I think we see a lot of divergence between countries in the core today. But let's imagine that the core will really become more of a core. And I would say, look, the very fact that we would be moving in that direction will be putting pressure on some of those less realistic politicians to say, you know, do we want to be really on the periphery or not? So I think that we still have time. There is a concern. I have a concern. There is a threat that we might not be. But I see no other reasonable option for the Czech Republic than to be really in the core, around the core. I mean, really influencing the future development of the European Union. And I think that we've got still a few years, but we need to start now, and we need to be aware what the negative consequences of not being a part of it would be on the Czech Republic.
Mr. Niedermayer, do you largely agree with that? Is the Czech Republic at the moment, it's not in the core, is it? It's a bit outside. I mean, if you look at the Eurogroup meetings, they're discussing a whole series of issues, and maybe other issues that aren't directly involved with the euro. People don't exactly know what all the things they discuss. So,
I would agree with what Mr. Telička said, that there is still time to make up our mind, and I guess we should make it rightly. And I agree with what you said at the conclusion. But otherwise, I have a slightly different analysis with some aspects, and I will go a little bit into the details that unfortunately are not understandable for so many of listeners, but I will try. But the first is simple. I guess that multi-speed Europe will make union weaker. Union weaker, people don't care, but if I say it will likely make a single market weaker, then we are concerned, because if suddenly certain countries will start to implement something, then sooner or later they will start to build certain small walls or gaps between those who implement something and those who have not. So it will make Europe weaker. A single market that is huge benefit for all of us will be weaker. And at the same time, when we say A, so we will divide some policies into group A and B, it will have some consequences. And these consequences will not be nice, and I'm afraid that maybe 20 years from now, or maybe 10 years from now, luckily never, there will be still European Union, but it will lose the substance, and there will be some other more narrow group that will actually play the role of European Union. The second thing that is, I guess, for us of crucial importance
is that European Union have very sophisticated, well-developed system of decision-making where countries like Czech Republic are playing very important role, actually. Not only we two as the members of parliament, but our ministers at the councils, our people that are working here, they play very important role. A multi-speed Europe is very often associated with weakening that so-called union approach in favor of multi-government approach and or intergovernmental approach, sorry. That means that actually there will be government who will decide, who will negotiate future, and the consequence is clear. Big countries will decide what they want and they will ask the others if they want to join. Our role in negotiating future of Europe will be diminished, and this is, I guess, this would be very serious for us, and also it has political consequences, I guess. So to conclude, I guess narrow Europe, so that multi-speed and then the power shifting from all European Union to that core will be bad for us, will be bad for European Union and Europe, because it will reduce our role, and especially for smaller states, it's dangerous. So I guess we still have a time to fight against it. And I guess it's far from being decided, because there are certain policies that tend to create impression of multi-speed Europe, but most of them were meant as a temporary. Concerning Euro, it was anticipated that gradually all countries will join Schengen, the same story. If we start to develop this approach and support it, I guess we will end up sometime soon at the situation that we will seize the opportunity to be functional and important, and the biggest cost will be for countries like Czech Republic.
You mentioned the euro. Can the Czech Republic be near the core, somewhere near the core, at the core, if it doesn't have the euro?
Under certain circumstances, very exceptional. Bearing in mind, let's say, that the Czech Republic would have a strong government with outstanding prime minister, outstanding ministers, would be very proactive with a number of initiatives in a number of other policy areas, from security through foreign or some other external policies to I don't know what, really contributive. I mean, would be the one of the driving forces of innovation, a real engine of creating a real internal market in digital, in transport, and so on. Then maybe, you know, it could somehow compensate it. But that is something that I would call exceptional circumstances. So I doubt it, to be honest. I mean, shortcut answer to your question is I doubt it. And you have referred to the fact that already today it's a matter of fact. I don't know whether it's an advantage or not, but the fact is that today there is still some divergence in the so-called core, or some among Eurozone countries, that there is still a lack of serious economic governance, that some personalities didn't get along that well. For example, I don't know, Chancellor with French President, you know, that makes a lot of a difference. But imagine that suddenly you will have in those two countries people that will, Prime Minister, Chancellors, Presidents, that will get along pretty well. Well, that UK might be out by a certain period of time, and suddenly you get the governance right, and you will really see suddenly more coherence among the euro, not in economic terms, just in political terms in the eurozone. Then I mean, it's extremely difficult then to compensate it.
So, to understand what you're saying, then you think the Czech Republic should, if it wants to be near the centre or near the core or somewhere around there, you have to have the euro.
You know, I have always been saying that I see three preconditions. One is that we meet the criteria on the Czech side, but in a sustainable way. That is, let's say, the difference to some other countries meeting the criteria in the past. I think if I would be hesitant 2 years ago or so, I would say today the sustainability is quite clear. I mean, we are really well off. Second is that the Eurozone will put its house into order. There has been some progress, and I think that the ambition is there. So I think that will also occur. And then you need to have a serious political public debate. And this is really what we are lacking, because, I mean, at the end of the day, it will be that simple for people to understand that the exchange rate on the day of conversion will be, I don't know, euro for 27 or 25 or 23. Yeah, you know, it's extremely sensitive and therefore political. So you need to get that right, and you need to have a serious debate. So they also are the the preconditions, if we meet them, and I think that we are on the path of meeting them, apart from the third one, then yes, I would say we need a debate as soon as possible. And for me, the pros now definitely, let's say, overwhelm or prevail to the cons.
Mm. But your party leader is saying something different, though, Mr. Babish. I mean, it
depends how you define party leader. I mean, I'm not a member of ANO, but you would say Andrei Babiš, leader of the movement of the party that I stood in the elections for. Yes, that is a matter of fact. We could see some of the differences also in some other political parties, but the truth is that here is a very strong voice. But for me, the voice is insufficient in terms of the arguments. I'm missing the arguments. And therefore, on this, this is probably one of the issues on which we differ and one of the issues on which we will have a debate. But one of the issues on which we might see some development after the elections in the coming period of time. I've just been in some of the Czech regions. I go every month, and the companies and enterprises I visited, for example, the day before yesterday, not a single one. I'm not talking about large corporates, but not a single SME or any other company would say, look, we are not sure about euro. I mean, on the contrary, we want euro.
Let's go to that argument that unfortunately the head of ANO is somehow overlooking, economically speaking, and I agree with what Mr. Telička said about the companies. It's economically beneficial because our economy is so closely associated with the Eurozone countries that it will just make trade simple, more simple, cheaper and more predictable. The second is, I with maybe certain exaggeration, but even maybe without that, there was never ever a country that was so well prepared for adoption of the euro, not only technically but economically. We are used to very low inflation, very low interest rates. We have a stable banking sector, low debt, reasonably well managed public finance. We are really ready to go. So economically it's a very strong call, and politically I also must agree it will be, obviously you can be outside of eurozone and being important part of European Union. I must say that some of my colleagues in the group are from non-Eurozone countries and they are the strongest, most convinced and most competent Europeans. But I must say that it's more difficult. And especially Czech politics, that is so much focus on Czech domestic topics, that is not bad, but sometimes also on misinterpretation of European policy, that is not so well. It's a danger. So I guess it would be much safer, much more easier to stay in that core of European Union if that division between core and the rest will get wider. And this will be safer for us because we are a small country, because of economic links and also because of geopolitical risk. Because if you look at the maps, it's quite obvious what will happen if we will be considered to not be part of European Union, somewhere stay in the middle, then someone else will come and will like to take over our great country. And it will be very unfortunate, really, for our future.
Okay. Looking at one other aspect of the future of Europe, I mean, to get things done in Europe, you have to form alliances, partnerships. The Czech Republic over the last few years has put a lot, seemed to put a lot into the Visegrad group, and there are constant meetings there. But with the current situation in Hungary and Poland, is that a mistake? Should the Czech Republic's foreign policy be looking wider and not putting all its eggs into this basket?
Well, I mean, just start with a quick one-word answer. Yes, wider. But let me explain maybe a bit. You know, Visegrad has been around for some time, and I've got a very long experience with Visegrad from my previous public life. I mean, it brought a number of positives. At the same time, it seemed to me like an escape route for some politicians when they were not feeling well in the environment in which they were, and they wouldn't have other counterparts and other parties to make, let's say, arrangements, deals, agreements with. Visegrad for me is something that is more than symbolic, it's useful, but primarily on issues which are not in the competence of the European Union. You know, some cross-border issues, I mean, infrastructure, culture, education, and so on. That it can be one of the, let's say, meeting rooms in the EU, yes. But I mean, especially nowadays with Orbán and with Kaczynski, you know, these are not the greatest partners. And the fact is, if it were honestly not for the Czechs, I think that Visegrad would be much more of a problem. There we play quite a positive role. But for me, apart from Visegrad, bilateral contacts with neighboring countries, it's really those that have the weight, that have the decision-making ability, that that are the center of gravity, and those with which quite often we have very common interests. And it's unfortunately rather a lack of ability of some politicians to be like a fish in the pond. I mean, you know, it seems to me like some of them are lost. Some of them still feel that we are not a part of the European Union. It's like us and the EU there. So the level of identifying yourself with the project. And sometimes it seems to me that they are running away to Visegrad because they don't feel sufficiently confident in the EU environment, as absurd as it may seem.
Do you share those criticisms that the Czech Republic has for EU issues being relying too much on Visegrad?
So first of all, if those architects of the idea that Visegrad will be kind of core of our politics of EU would mean it seriously, they would just look at simple figures and they will immediately see that Visegrad is far from forming the blocking minority that can actually overturn decision of the others. So that means that it's just too small. But I fully agree with the fact that unfortunately Visegrad has get on wrong way. Not all country, but as such, I guess it has lost legitimacy in speaking on behalf of new member states of ex-communist countries. That is very unfortunate because I guess this was original intention that we will somehow represent interest of those countries. We will communicate with them. But for the time being, Visegrad is not considered like this. This is considered as kind of strange union of countries that have very strange view of some European policies. But if we look into the details, and if I look at some key debates in Europe, for example, environmental policy, economic policy, I'm very happy that I can say that actually our positions are much closer to position of countries like Austria, Germany, Benelux, Scandinavia. So even when we talk about the substance, there was some kind of demerger between the positions of, for example, Polish that obviously in economic matters have very strong views. When we talk about Hungary, we demerged with them because they have completely different view of running the society. And with Slovakia, we have certain division because Slovakia, as a member of Eurozone, must really look at things a little bit more complex way. So I guess it's time to really accept the reality and to look after the partners that much more share our views. But at the same time, I would be very happy if the countries in Visegrad region will get back to the values that brought us out from the communist times into liberal, free, liberal society, democracy and freedom, and we will be representing this value.
Last question, and I'm going to put you on the spot, Mr. Telička. Elections coming up in the Czech Republic, you have a high post in the European Parliament. Could you see yourself going back into the Czech domestic political scene, or do you think your place is here?
Well, today on the 26th, the answer is quite simple and clear. I see my place here. You never know, of course, what kind of debate may arise and so on, but I think I've got clear views on that. I would have a number of reasons, professional, private, but also political. We'll have to see, you know, how things work out in the elections, what will be the outcome, what will be the coalition, who will be in the government, so on. But to make it, I mean, simple, I could hardly imagine that I could look at myself in the mirror as a person that has been appointed as minister or a deputy prime minister by the current president. But there are more reasons to it.